Look in the mirror. When did your metabolism decide to take a permanent vacation? You're working out, eating decent, but that stubborn gut just won't budge. Standard diets don't work anymore. They just starve your body, crash your energy, and burn away the lean muscle you actually want to keep. It's time to break the cycle with Almased. Almased isn't a fad diet. It's a high-protein, all-natural meal replacement shake, scientifically backed to burn deep belly fat while protecting your muscle mass. The secret is a unique, low-glycemic formula. It keeps your insulin in check, forcing your body to stop storing fat and start burning it for fuel.
I hit 50 and my energy cratered, while my waistline did the opposite. Nothing got rid of my belly fat until I tried Almased. I dropped the belly, got more energy, and honestly, I feel like I'm in my 30s again.
Don't settle for slowing down. Protect your muscle, kickstart your energy, and lose the gut for good. Go to Almased.com and use promo code BELLY to get a free shaker bottle and a free weight loss guide with your first order. That's Almased.com, promo code BELLY.
You read labels on your food because what's in it matters. Dirty Labs brings that same thinking to your dishes. In other words, what touches your food matters too. Dirty Labs is proving that cleaning doesn't have to be so dirty. So they created a dishwasher detergent designed to deliver conventional levels of clean without the toxic chemicals or residue. Because the plates and forks your family eats from deserve the same care as the food you put on them. Fall in love, or it's free, at DirtyLabs.com.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Well, we've got more news on the ongoing stadium saga regarding the Kansas City Chiefs and Kansas City Royals. It's been reported today that Jackson County Executive Frank White has now proposed to Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe renewing the 3/8 cent sales tax that was voted down in Jackson County a year ago to help keep the Chiefs in Missouri. But there is a slight discrepancy in how White believes that the 3/8 cent sales tax, if it were to come to fruition, would be spent now versus how it was spent previously. According to KNBC 9, the letter that White wrote was sent to Governor Kehoe on July 8th that would help modernize Arrowhead Stadium, but there would also be stipulations to it where, like, it says a third of the money, roughly, would go to the Arrowhead Stadium renovations. Another third would go to renovating a juvenile rehabilitation facility and invest in university health, and also upgrading the historic downtown courthouse in Jackson County. White believes that the plan would generate somewhere between $500 to $700 million for each of these three components: the Kansas City Chiefs and their renovations, the public safety initiatives, and university health. There was no funding whatsoever mentioned for the Kansas City Royals. White said in the letter that the Royals have not expressed any interest in re-engaging with the county. Now, this is all happening while there is this vote that was handed down, this unanimous vote handed down regarding whether or not Frank White should remain the executive of Jackson County. So, who knows where this thing is going to go? Does this 3/8 cent sales tax pair with the proposal of 50% from Governor Kehoe in the state of Missouri to help the Kansas City Chiefs either renovate Arrowhead or pay for a new stadium? Sounds like, from Frank White's perspective, if this passes, the Chiefs would use that money to renovate Arrowhead, and that's their only option. It wouldn't go towards helping them build a new stadium. I don't know. I don't know if this is a last-ditch effort sort of a thing for Frank White as the executive of Jackson County. I'm not quite sure, but that's the latest on that, and we won't go into much detail beyond it.
I think it's him trying to save his job.
Feels that way a little bit, yeah.
People are not too happy with him because of the property tax situation. And then you've got a situation where not only do you have the property tax situation, but Kansas City, Missouri could also lose. Jackson County could also lose both the Royals and the Chiefs. And I'm going to tell you this right now. history ain't going to look too kindly on his time as the executive if he loses both major professional teams that are in his county. And on top of that, you have an issue where people had major property tax problems that had caused them to have to dispute these numbers because the taxes were outrageous. So, yeah, I think it's more of a legacy saving move than anything. And I don't know, maybe it works as far as keeping the Chiefs here. I don't think it works as far as saving his legacy.
I doubt it at this point. And, you know, this is a situation that we've watched unfold for, man, at least a couple of years now, right? I mean, since the vote last April, it was voted down. And from my perspective, I didn't necessarily disagree with it being voted down. I felt like the plan was rushed, thrown together last minute. The Chiefs threw themselves into the ring in February and expected everybody to just go along with it. It was mismanaged in a lot of respects. But, you know, now I wasn't living in Jackson County when this was all happening, right? I mean, but now my wife and I, we live in Jackson County. I vote in Jackson County. So it's something that means a little bit more now. There's a lot more that could go your way or against you as a resident of Jackson County with how the Chiefs and the Royal Stadium situation plays out.
Yeah, my thing is this is like, as long as they stay in the Metro, I'm cool with it at this point. Cause you know, I assume someone's going to pay for it. I think both teams are dedicated to staying in town. So, that certainly is reassuring here. But yeah, I mean, regardless of what happens, the Chiefs will take the best deal that they can get. And if the best deal is from them or from Johnson County, or from Wyandotte, they'll take that offer. But I do think that this probably means that the Royals are definitely out on Jackson County. At least that's what it seems. Maybe something, you know, a crazy Hail Mary type situation happens. But the fact that this was mainly about the Chiefs here, the fact that like when Manny Barker was trying to get that vote last year is about the Chiefs. I don't think they have a lot of confidence that the Royals are going to be there. Maybe something changes there. I know the Royals are obviously going to try to make sure they get the best deal they possibly can, but it's looking a little rough there right now as far as them staying in Jackson County.
By putting nothing in regards to the Royals on the table for the 3-8-cent sales tax, because the conversation has always come back around for the Royals to the downtown ballpark. We know that John Sherman and this ownership group wants a downtown ballpark so bad. You know, the ambiance and the view of a downtown ballpark in Major League Baseball is a very, very enticing thing. Downtown Kansas City is in Jackson County. So if, you know, the downtown ballpark is a possibility, why isn't that being roped in to the possibility of this 3-8-cent sales tax, right? I find that very, very interesting. Of course, that means, you know, places like Clay County, which has begun to garner more and more attention and more column inches in regards to where the Royals may end up. I don't know. I have no idea what's happening. Right. They were, oh, they're going to stay in Missouri. It's going to be a downtown ballpark and the Chiefs are going to stay. And then the vote fails. And then it's like, OK, where are we going to go? And OK, maybe they're going to Kansas. And now it's OK, they're going to stay in Missouri. But where in Missouri? It's I don't know. I am over it at this point.
I think everyone is. I think everyone just wants them to figure it out, because at the end of the day, I think we just want to make sure that we can go watch the team, or that the team is here so they can represent the city. But like these type of fights, it's the tough part about it is that neither side is going to get a lot of the public support there, because it's, you know, billionaires fighting with the government. And, you know, there's a lot of mistrust on both ends of that. And because of that, there is absolutely going to be a lot of contention from regular people, because it's like, for most of us, we don't really feel like we get a say in all of this. And I think that's probably the most frustrating part about it, is that we don't really get much of a say. No. And so, yeah, there's absolutely frustration from people, and there's fatigue about it, because it's like we just want to be able to enjoy the games and not have to think about this part of it. You know, it's we don't want to know how the sausage is made. We want to just enjoy the sausage. And like, that's the problem, I think, with all of this, is like, because all of this is out there and because all of the sides are kind of trying to play everything publicly to try to see if they can garner support like that, it kind of sucks if you're just a fan that wants to enjoy the sports, because not everybody wants to sit around thinking about this kind of stuff. Not everybody really understands all of this stuff.
Right.
So it's like you just want to be able to watch your favorite team go play at a nice stadium in a convenient location, and hopefully your team wins. And that's really all that matters to the average Kansas City sports fan. So it's kind of frustrating when you have all these politics kind of playing out there, and especially when you kind of look at both sides and you're like, both sides, like, you could probably point to some missteps they've made and good points that they make as well. So like that part also makes it really tough as well, because it's not like a good versus evil type thing. It's a lot more of a nuanced conversation. Mm-hmm. And that part's really tough for people to get around, because all the average Kansas City sports fan cares about is how good the teams are.
Yeah.
Like, we,
and that they're still here.
They're still here.
Right. That's yeah. The two biggest aspects of this entire conversation is, are they still here? I don't care if the Royals are playing in Clay County. I don't care if they're in North Kansas. I don't care if they're in Platte City. I don't care if they're in Lenexa. I don't care. Just stay in the Metro. That's the biggest thing. You know, 913-586-7965 is our text line number. The Royals aren't mentioned because Frank White is hating on them. Somebody else said, aren't Frank and the Royals kind of on bad terms? There has been a lot reported on that. I'm not going to say definitively one way or the other. I haven't heard, you know, personally from a reputable source that Frank White hates the Royals and the Royals hate Frank White or anything like that. They've had their tete-a-tetes, as is to be expected. He's a member of, you know, the government of Jackson County, and the Royals are located in Jackson County. There's bound to be disagreements.
Well, it was more than that. It was also him when he worked for the
there was also that.
Yeah, when he worked for the TV network there. There was that part too. I think there's some lingering animosity from that, and I think it's kind of spilled over into politics now.
Wouldn't shock me.
I think that it's very possible the Royals end up going to the Hesperia campus. I think that is a very legitimate prospect for them. The money is easy there. I tell you this, there's a lot of effort with them with trying to get them to go there. It wouldn't be the situation that the Royals envisioned exactly, but it might be the best situation they can get,
right,
based on how things are going there. And, you know, if that's what it is, I think the Royals would be happy in that situation there. But yeah, I mean, look, the average fan just wants the teams to be in the city and to win. And that's all that matters. And so when you've got all of this, like, articles coming out, leaked stuff out here, it seems like every month now, the average fan doesn't care. They just want the team to win. And that's what matters. And the frustrating part is that you've got the politics coming into sports in a way that's a little unnecessary.
Yeah, I mean, the politics equals agendas, right? The Royals have an agenda, the Chiefs have an agenda, the politicians in Jackson County and Missouri and in Kansas and in Johnson County, right? Everybody's got an agenda with this thing, and they are putting their personal beliefs and personal feelings and their own personal desires potentially ahead of the majority of fans. At the end of the day, I just want to know, who's on the team and where do I have to go, right? Do I have to drive to North Kansas City? Do I have to drive downtown? Do I have to continue to drive to the complex? Do I have to drive over to Kansas? Overland Park or Lenexa? Just tell me where to go and where the rest of us can go to continue to watch and enjoy our teams. Somebody in the text lines, if this results in the Indianapolis Royals or something, part of me will die forever. Yeah. Yeah. The last thing I need is to watch the Nashville Royals competing in the American League Central 5-6 years from now.
Yeah. I think that's like worst case scenario. I'm not really confident that happens. I think them purchasing the Hesperia campus, I think they did it for a reason. I don't think that was just cause. I think they did that for a reason.
It felt like leverage to me. It felt like leveraging Missouri.
That's a pretty expensive leverage.
It is.
That's why I don't, because that's a huge complex and that's very, very expensive. So I have my doubts that was, because the city of Overland Park has been looking at that location as a potential stadium location since early last year. Mm-hmm. So like, I do not think that that was just a leverage play. I think that that's a serious option. And it seems weird for a lot of people thinking about them there. I do think that's a serious option. And I think people should take it seriously because the Royals didn't let it get out there for nothing. I think they would absolutely, like, I think they are using it for leverage to some degree, but, like, it's because it's a serious option. Mm-hmm. It's not just a thing that they spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on just because.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because they could hold on to it. Right? I think they purchased the land rights over there at the Hesperia campus, right, but they still have the possibility of selling it back to the people who already owned it. If they wanted to, they got a great deal.
They could.
They could. I mean, it was kind of a win-win for them as an organization, right? They bought it from somebody that we believe is attached to the ownership group, but it wasn't necessarily bought for the express. I don't know. It's a whole weird roundabout legal jargon way of how they did it. It's going to be fascinating how it all plays out. At the end of the day, I just want to see it play out. Just get it over with. Let's just know what these teams are going to do here in the next 5 years. Those leases at Arrowhead and Kauffman are up in 5 years. So where are we going?
And that's
going
to move really quick. I remember when they first, like when they, the last time they had the stadium issue, which was in like the late 2000s. It's like, oh man, 25 years. Oh, that'll fly by. That'll be forever. And then now we're looking at it and it's coming up here in 5 years. So it's like, It's going to be real fast if the city, the county, and the Royals and Chiefs don't get it taken care of. So, I mean, there's still some time, but that's going to move quick. So hopefully we get a resolution here, and hopefully we don't have to talk about stadiums in a year or two.
I just want it over with. 913-586-7965 is our number. Much more coming up here on the show. Second round picks in the National Football League are in a battle of wills with their respective organizations, or at least 30 out of the 32, because of the contract between one team and one player. What do Chris and I think about it? How will it play out with these other 30 teams, including the Kansas City Chiefs and their second round pick, Omar Norman Lott, as we are a week or two away from these 32 teams going into training camp? You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber, Chris Unocero on 96.5, The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Give me those sauces.
Grab the chicken strips.
Let's dunk them in there. There's nothing like it.
Boy, I didn't think when the deal was announced that Jaden Higgins and the Houston Texans were breaking the NFL, but things have gotten fascinating. And I hate to put all the onus onto Jaden Higgins and the Houston Texans, because Carson Schwesinger also signed a fully guaranteed deal with the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, they were the first and second picks of the second round of the NFL draft. The problem has now become, since those two guys signed fully guaranteed deals, which are the first, I believe, first fully guaranteed deals for second round picks in NFL history, none of the other 30 second round picks have signed a deal. And that includes Omar Norman Lott of the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, you've got two first round picks in Shamar Stewart and Jadai Barron, who have not signed their contracts either. Training camp begins, like, for the Chiefs in like a week. For, you know, everybody's going to start training camp here in the next week or two. Where is this going to go? Like, could we legitimately see a bunch of these teams get into the preseason and maybe even the regular season without having their high draft picks signed to play this year in their rookie season?
It's very possible. It's what it seems like right now with so many of these second round picks not signed. If this continues and becomes a problem where some of these guys end up missing time, missing games because of, you know, them, teams refusing to not sign them to the kind of contracts they want, the NFL, especially this new CBA, they're going to have to start reworking these rookie contracts. And they're probably going to have to go towards the NBA model, which is you get a 2-year deal with two team options, all fully guaranteed. And that's the only real compromise you could have here. Because, you know, the problem is that the way that football is, one, teams draft terrible So there's a lot of guys who get drafted first, second round that don't end up being good. So if you have a fully guaranteed contract, teams just can't get out of that deal. That's just not that doesn't work for these teams. These team owners, they are used to having their players be able to get get out of bad contracts. Or let's say you sign a good contract, player gets hurt. You're used to being able to get out of that. But if you have a fully guaranteed deal, you obviously can't. So, I mean, this is obviously going to be a CBA fight that happens when, you know, in a few years when the NFL opts out of the CBA. So, look, I think at the end of the day, what's going to end up happening is the players are going to end up capitulating a little bit because you don't want to miss a year of football. You don't want to miss out on time with your teams because that's just going to set you back as far as getting to that big payday on your second contract. So I think they're going to sign, but I'm sure that these agents, it's funny. It's like, I think the league, like these owners are colluding together to try to make sure they don't give out these fully guaranteed contracts. And I think you have agents who are colluding to make sure they do get these fully guaranteed contracts. And you had a couple of teams that were able to capitulate to it. And I think the rest of the teams and players on each side, they're locked into their position. And so somebody's going to have to break there. And I think it's going to end up being the players that do it. It's just, they have more to lose.
It's fascinating to me. You mentioned the CBA, which doesn't expire until March of 2031. So we're like right around the halfway point. CBA,
can't they opt out after they can opt out after 2030, I think.
Yeah, it's currently, it was ratified in 2020 and it goes through the end of the 2030 league year. I don't know if I'm not reading about an opt out necessarily.
Yeah, I thought it was an opt out a year ahead of time they could opt out. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
There could be an opt out in 2029. I'm not quite sure. It fascinates me that we're seeing two sides of the coin here, though, right? With these second round picks, they're trying to do something that prior to Schlesinger and Jaden Higgins was unprecedented, a second round pick signing a fully guaranteed contract. So that's one side of the coin where the players are trying to force the hand of ownership in that respect. And then you have the other side of that coin with Shamar Stewart and Jadai Barron, two guys who were drafted in the first round, which in the current CBA format has always involved fully guaranteed contracts for first round picks. But with Barron and Stewart, they're in negotiations with the Broncos and the Bengals, and the ownership of the Broncos and Bengals, or management, what have you, is trying to skirt around those fully guaranteed contracts with a first round pick, right? They've put all of these stipulations and things into the contracts that they have offered to protect themselves against the possibility of, you know, poor play, not necessarily poor play,
but it's more off-field issues
and things of that nature. And so Stewart and Jadai Barron are refusing to sign and cave to those requests because, well, that's not the way that it's been done since the 2020 CBA with these fully guaranteed contracts. I don't disagree with you. I think the NBA format for draft picks could become a possibility. It's a matter of, where do you draw the line of these fully guaranteed sort of deals, right? In the NBA, there's only 60 guys picked. There's only two rounds to an NBA draft. You have seven rounds in the NFL. So is it only first round guys? Well, that's the way it's been done. And now you have this issue with second round picks. Okay, second round picks are now included. Then you might have problems with third round picks. Is it, you know, how does it ultimately play out with this situation? Because obviously, I don't see a scenario where you see fourth, fifth, sixth, or even seventh round picks getting fully guaranteed contracts because sometimes those guys don't even make the roster in their first year, right? They don't make the 53 man.
Well, I think it depends on like when you choose to exercise that part. And certainly, yeah, maybe it might be a limit to like maybe the first 2 days that you do see those. But like I said, I think that for sure, you're going to see a situation where first three rounds, like those players are going to try to get as much guaranteed money as they can.
I would agree.
And I think if you go to that formula of, if for first rounds, obviously it'd be two fully guaranteed years and then three options in that case, because there's already an option for the fifth year anyways for first round picks. So you would just be adding option years for years three and four. And in the case of the second and third round picks, because they can only sign 4 year deals, it's a 2+2 team options. So that would, and that's exactly what they do in the NBA. 2 years plus two team options, fully guaranteed. I think that's the only way you can have any sort of compromise on that. And one that helps out the teams because it means you can get out of those deals a little bit easier. But also, it means that those players, like, let's say you're not in a good situation there. Maybe you're, you know, maybe things just don't work out where you are. Maybe you can hit free agency quicker and you can go elsewhere. But I think that's really kind of the only compromise you could have, is doing a 2+, you know, X amount of team options. But I mean, right now, I don't think they're going to win this battle, but I think they could win this battle in the future with the next CBA. But they're also going to have to concede on some parts too, because that's generally how these go. It's like, you get a win here, you take a loss there. So there's going to have to be some compromise for sure.
Yeah, I understand the impulse of these second round picks. When you see Schlesinger and Higgins sign these fully guaranteed deals, it's like, well, I want that too, because, you know, an injury could upend your career tomorrow, right? But it's unprecedented. It's never been done before. And I read a ton of articles on it. You know, I was reading Florio's article from Pro Football Talk, which I don't read a lot of PFT because Florio doesn't always do the greatest of jobs. But he said, you know, I kind of agree with his sentiment that they may have waited too long to sort of collectively come together and say, you know, we want nothing to do with this, because right now the owners kind of are in the best position. I mean, these are 21, 22-year-old kids that have, you know, some of them have never had any real semblance of money of any kind, you know, in their lives. At least not the money that we're talking about right now as an NFL player. You know, you get into a holdout sort of a scenario where you're not making any money. Now, if they're not under contract necessarily, does that mean that they incur fines? I'm not quite sure.
I don't think they do.
I wouldn't imagine that they do.
It's like if a player doesn't sign their franchise tag, like if you don't sign your franchise tag, you can't get fined because you're not under contract.
But it's fascinating to me, and this is, I think, an under, you know, and not so talked about part of this story. All of these guys, every single player, the 30 out of 32 that are holding out as second round picks, and Barron and Shamar Stewart, all 32 of them participated in mandatory minicamp and rookie OTAs. And so you didn't hold out during those periods of the season. That's when you should have really stood your ground, was during rookie minicamp, was during mandatory minicamp and OTA. Like, that's the time to do it, but to participate in those things. And now you're trying to take a stand right before training camp begins. I mean, the Chargers start on Wednesday, and Trey Harris is still not signed for the Los Angeles Chargers. So I find it fascinating that these guys went through offseason workouts with their respective franchises after being drafted. But now that we're about to approach the season, now is the time that you're trying to collectively take a stand and get these fully guaranteed contracts.
I can understand it from the player perspective, because you want to make a show of good faith by showing up and being with your team. And like, you don't think you're going to end up in a long holdout type situation when you do that in the first place. Like, I'm sure all of those guys were thinking, oh, well, this will get situated before camp and we'll be good. And it hasn't, because the NFL's really dug in on making sure players don't get fully guaranteed contracts. And I understand it from their part, and I understand it from the player part. So, I mean, look, both sides, I think, are going to try to play this in the public. I don't think it's going to go well for either side, because whenever you have labor disputes like this between millionaires and billionaires, the public generally doesn't care. They're just like, we just want football. So either way, both sides are going to get flack for it. They're both going to look bad. And, you know, I think certainly the NFL and the NFLPA, which, you know, right now, neither side are really looking good on this, you know, in this whole situation here. They're going to have some things to talk about when it comes to the CBA in a few years, because I think that this is going to be something that's contentious over the next few years, because players understand, hey, we're trying to get as much money as we can. I think in the case of like Jahdae Barron and Shamar Stewart, like, I think they have a good reason because, you know, when you have teams actively trying to find more ways to void the entirety of the guaranteed money on your contract, like, to me, that seems like it's a little bit too much there, because a lot of these teams look for any leverage they can to try to screw players over. And we see a lot of players end up in bad spots. And man, like, I get players wanting to try to fight for every guaranteed dollar they can get, because the game is brutal to a lot of these players. So teams trying to find some new way to write in language into contracts they can void guarantees for stuff that happens off the field. I mean, yeah, I just, to me, it's like, I completely understand why Barron and Shamar Stewart are doing that, for sure.
No question.
In the case of the second round picks, I mean, you know, I think they're fighting an uphill battle, because it's just not something that you've seen. And I think there's going to have to be some sort of like NBA like compromise.
Yeah, you're fighting an uphill battle when you are not under contract and you get into the regular season starts and you're still not on a team. You're not making money. You may not be, you know, being fined necessarily.
Now, a lot of these guys did make NIL money. So it's like they have a little bit more leverage than they used to in the past, because it's like, nowadays, like, a lot of these guys, they're staying like, since NIL came into play, they're staying longer in college, because they're making money at playing in college ball. So this might actually be something that encourages some guys who could leave a year early to stay, so they can kind of wait to let this labor fight play out, and they can still make good money in college. So this actually might work against the NFL in the long run if they let this play out without a good solution.
Man, it's going to be fascinating to see. I think at the end of the day, I think it's fair to say that it's going to change some of the aspects of contracts and rookie deals in the National Football League, no matter how this thing ultimately culminates. You know, talking about contracts and things of that nature, we got a day here. July 15th is the deadline for an extension for players on the franchise tag. And that, of course, includes Kansas City Chiefs guard Trey Smith. Will we hear in the next 24 hours news of a long-term extension for Trey Smith? Or will the former Tennessee Volunteer Pro Bowler at right guard ultimately play this year on the franchise tag for the Kansas City Chiefs? We'll talk about that next here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside producer Chris Unocero. This is 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Hi there, I'm Charlie.
And I'm Carter.
After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero. I want to talk a little bit later about Trey Smith. The Chiefs have until 4 p.m. tomorrow to announce a long-term extension with Trey Smith. Otherwise, he will be on the franchise tag for the Kansas City Chiefs this year, set to make somewhere around $23.5 million this upcoming season. I think regardless of whether a long-term deal comes down the pike or not, Trey Smith is going to become the highest-paid guard in NFL history, right? Right now, it's Landon Dickerson, who is making $21 million a year, currently on a four-year deal with Philadelphia. Smith right now is at 23.4 under the franchise tag. It could be somewhere between $22 and $24 million, I think, is kind of the range on him, spread out in a lot of interesting respects. But I don't know how this one's going to play out. You know, I've seen random pages on Twitter, Slick Rick Scoops.
Pretty Ricky.
Who says that the Chiefs will be announcing tomorrow a record-breaking four-year deal with Trey Smith. How reputable a source is Slick Rick Scoops?
He's been pretty right about a lot of stuff. He's been pretty right.
My guy has a profile picture is a dog with a hat and sunglasses on.
Ricky's been right about a lot of stuff. So we'll see. I'll tell you this. If he's right about that one, can't really doubt him anymore. But he's been right about a lot of stuff. I think he was the one that said he predicted George Pickens, Jalen Ramsey. I mean, Russell Wilson to the Giants. I mean, he's been right about a lot of these deals. So we'll see. I mean, he did say back in March that this deal would happen at some point, 4 years for 23 a year, So we'll see. The deadline is like, what is it, 3 p.m. Central tomorrow? So we're going to find out here in less than 24 hours, now about 20 hours, 19 hours. So we'll see.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he did mention Jalen Ramsey getting traded back at the end of June. So
yeah, he also correctly predicted the Chiefs to draft Kingsley Suamataia, but he said in the first round, not the second round.
Interesting.
So yeah, but he's been right about a lot of stuff. So we'll see. I mean, that's certainly, like I said, I think that the Chiefs are motivated to try to get a deal done. I certainly think that Trey Smith is motivated to try to get a deal done. Sometimes you just don't agree on the years and the compensation. I think it's probably more so years than compensation. Reportedly, the Chiefs want a 5-year deal. Trey reportedly wants a 4-year deal, which makes sense. Makes a lot of sense for him to want to get 4 because he can hit free agency faster.
Right. Hit a third contract in the league. Yeah.
Exactly. Not very many guys get that third contract. That's a good contract. That's not like a 1-year deal. So we'll see. I mean, like I said, I hope the Chiefs come to an agreement with him because it would be nice to not have to think about that for a while.
Yeah, it'd be nice to just know that Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith are going to be the stalwarts along your offensive line for many, many years to come as you continue to try to maneuver pieces around to figure out what's going to go with the other three spots. You know, it's Juwan Taylor this year at right tackle. It's likely to be Kingsley Suamataia at left guard. And man, I think the confidence level in Josh Simmons at left tackle is just rising more and more and more the closer we've gotten to training camp in the beginning of the season. If it's not him, then it's Jalen Moore. And
yeah, I'd like to temper expectations on Simmons this
year. I would agree.
I'd like to. Me and Binka talked about that on the Character Concerns podcast. Please do not just assume that Josh Simmons should and will get that starting left tackle position. And if he does, you should still be skeptical.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I've always said that if he's the guy week one against the Chargers in Brazil, then he needs to be the guy the entire year. I don't think you can afford to have a situation similar to what happened to Kingsley Suamataia last year. Not with a guy like Josh Simmons, not 2 years in a row, and not with a guy you're paying first round money to.
My thing is not even that. It's just the thing is, I want him to be far and away the winner of that position because Kingsley was not last year. The minute that they put on the pads, they just gave it to him. And I want Simmons, if he gets that job, I want him to earn it.
Yeah.
I don't want him to be given it because you think you love his talent and you think he's going to be the guy. I want you to know he's the guy. I would much rather they be safe with Jalen Moore than take a risk with Joshua Simmons, especially him coming off the knee injury and especially knowing what we know about how confidence can be fleeting for these professional athletes.
913-586-7965 is our number. I just ran across the updated odds for the American League Rookie of the Year. And while I have no issue with who has the best odds and who is the obvious pick for the American League Rookie of the Year, there's one particular member of the Kansas City Royals that I don't believe is getting his fair shake. He's not getting his due right now. I want to talk about that a little bit coming up next. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
BetMGM is making your next...
Listen, I don't think that odds are the end-all be-all of anything. But boy, I'm not sure what's up with the American League Rookie of the Year odds. Fox Sports released their updated rankings today. Updated odds. Jacob Wilson is, of course, the leader in the clubhouse at +115, as is to be expected. He's the American League starter at shortstop. He's hitting .332 this year. He's had a remarkable rookie season. Sitting in second at +350 is Nick Kurtz, also of the Athletics. Having a, you know, good enough year. He's hitting .257. He's got 17 home runs, 44 RBIs. He's got an on-base percentage at .333, an OPS of nearly 900. So he's had a great year. Third is Roman Anthony at +1700. Roman Anthony, who's hitting .264 with only 2 home runs and 13 RBIs. He's got a .371 OBP, which is really, really impressive. He's got 15 walks so far this year, but okay, in third, I guess. Jason Dominguez is in fourth New York Yankees prospect, hitting 266 so far in his rookie year, 8 home runs, 34 ribbies. And then you've got this log jam, tied for 5th at plus 8,500 for AL Rookie of the Year odds. Jack Leiter of the Texas Rangers, who has a 4.37 ERA. Shane Smith of the White Sox with a 4.26 ERA. Will Warren of the Yankees with a 4.63 ERA. Marcelo Meyer of the Red Sox, who's hitting 224. And then you've got Noah Cameron. Yes, I understand that the guy's only 3-4 this year, but he's got a 2.31 ERA and a whip of exactly 1. 58 strikeouts this year to 22 walks. He's only given up 18 earned runs across 70 innings in 12 starts. An ERA plus of 177, which is the best among rookie pitchers in Major League Baseball this year, with at least 10 starts to their name. Yet, right now, he is tied for the 5th best odds to win the American League Rookie of the Year. Jacob Wilson is going to be the AL Rookie of the Year. I'm not disputing that fact. But Noah Cameron should be at least 2nd or 3rd for the best odds to win AL Rookie of the Year based off of the first half that he just had. A 2.31 ERA, and you're telling me that he has got the same odds as 3 pitchers with ERAs above 4. That doesn't make any sense.
Excuse me. You know that this stuff's not a meritocracy.
I hate it.
You know it's a popularity contest. I mean, Josh Allen won the Joel MVP, Embiid MVP. He won the participation trophy MVP because he hadn't been able to win it for many years before, and people got tired of giving it to Lamar Jackson because Lamar should have won it last year. And they were like, let's give it to Josh because he played really well, and you could kind of make a case, but you could also make a great case for Lamar too. So it was like, let's just give it to Josh because Lamar's got 2. Like it's the situation there with Joel Embiid where he got his MVP because people got tired of giving it to Nikola Jokic. That's just how it is. And this is one of those situations where it's a popularity contest.
Mm-hmm. You could have even made the argument last year in the NFL for Joe Burrow. He wasn't going to win it because his team didn't make the postseason.
Right, yeah, I don't know if you could. Yeah, if you don't make the playoffs, I don't know how valuable you really are.
Guy led the league in yards and touchdown passes.
Right, but how valuable are you if you don't make the playoffs? Like, I think value is the key part of that. But yeah, I mean, like I said, like the thing is, it's a popularity contest. And those guys play in bigger markets, play for more notable teams. I mean, yeah, I know like the Athletics don't really, they're playing in Sacramento right now.
Right.
But they certainly are a more notable franchise than the Royals are. I mean, I don't think Bobby Witt Jr. gets the shine that he deserves. Mikel Garcia definitely doesn't get the shine that he deserves.
Nope.
Salvi has never gotten the shine that he deserves. I mean, really, I think people just started figuring out like at the end of the 2010s how great Salvi is. And Salvi's been great for over a decade. So it's like a lot of our guys don't really get the shine. Alex Gordon never got the shine that he deserved when he played in Kansas City. This is just how it is. So it's like, I think we got to get away from, we got to win awards because, you know, we deserve it. It's like, especially in baseball, a regional sport where not everybody is watching these teams nationally. Not every one of these people is paying attention to what everyone else is doing in other markets. The amount of like hardcore baseball fans is starting to diminish, which means that the guys who deserve to get awards like this probably aren't going to get them if they're not as noticeable of a franchise. Like the days of an Angel Barroa winning an AL Rookie of the Year, those are gone. Yeah. Those are gone. Like seriously, I think we just have to understand that this is part of the symptom of being in Kansas City is that a lot of people are going to overlook the great talent that we have here. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And especially for a regional sport like baseball now, I mean, that's just kind of a caveat that you have to deal with.
Right. I mean, I look at, like, you bring up Salvi and, like, him not getting his due. I think back to that 2021 season. He hit 48 home runs. He had 121 RBIs. He accomplished 2/3 of a triple crown. And somehow finished 7th in the MVP voting. I fear a little bit for Cal Raleigh this year with the Seattle Mariners, because he's making as good a case as there has ever been for a catcher to be the MVP. And I'm not sure he might get overshadowed. I hope not, because
he probably is. I mean, let's
what he's doing this year hasn't been seen since Barry Bonds in 01. 38 homers before the All-Star break is complete insanity. But I mean, Salvi was remarkable, hit 270, 48 bombs, 121 ribbies, but he was on a bad baseball team, and he finishes seventh in the MVP voting, despite hitting more home runs than any primary catcher had ever hit in a single season.
Yeah. We also have to understand that catcher generally isn't the sexy position there. Like, I still think Bobby Wood Jr. should have won the MVP last year. And I think he's a more complete player. When Ohtani pitches, I think he's the best player in baseball. If Ohtani's just a hitter, I think Bobby's the best player in baseball. Because, I mean, the way that he plays defense, the way that he hits, I mean, the way he runs bases, I mean, you don't get better than that. But, again, he plays in Kansas City, so he's never going to get the shine that he gets. And that's just a reality of being a Royal. It sucks. But, you know, sometimes reality is very unfortunate, and I think that's what it is when you're a Kansas City Royal. And that's the reason why I hope that spurs the Royals to go out there and achieve something much greater than what they have, because that's the only way they're going to get the shine that they deserve.
Yeah, they got to be a hot commodity. They got to be a consistent competitive winner in baseball, I think, for some of these outstanding players to get their just due, at least consistently.
Yeah, remember that 2015 team?
Exactly.
They weren't as fun to watch as the Blue Jays were, and so the Blue Jays were the favorite to come out of the AL, and then the Royals went out there and beat them in six.
Yeah. 913-586-7965 is our number. Hour number three of After Hours here on this Monday. Coming your way next, Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Look in the mirror. When did your metabolism decide to take a permanent vacation? You're working out, eating decent, but that stubborn gut just won't budge. Standard diets don't work anymore. They just starve your body, crash your energy, and burn away the lean muscle you actually want to keep. It's time to break the cycle with Almased. Almased isn't a fad diet. It's a high-protein, all-natural meal replacement shake, scientifically backed to burn deep belly fat while protecting your muscle mass. The secret is a unique, low-glycemic formula. It keeps your insulin in check, forcing your body to stop storing fat and start burning it for fuel.
I hit 50 and my energy cratered, while my waistline did the opposite. Nothing got rid of my belly fat until I tried Almased. I dropped the belly, got more energy, and honestly, I feel like I'm in my 30s again.
Don't settle for slowing down. Protect your muscle, kickstart your energy, and lose the gut for good. Go to Almased.com and use promo code BELLY to get a free shaker bottle and a free weight loss guide with your first order. That's Almased.com, promo code BELLY.
Too often, green laundry detergents come with a compromise. They're better for the planet, but worse at the one thing that matters most, cleaning your clothes. Dirty Labs believes you shouldn't have to lower your standards for the sake of sustainability. Using advanced green chemistry, they created a detergent that uses an entirely new cleaning engine, inspired by the genius of nature. If Dirty Labs can't make you believe in the power of green cleaning, nothing will. Fall in love, or it's free. At DirtyLabs.com.
You know, over the years, I've seen it all. So now, I'm sharing it all. Join me for unfiltered talks with the names you love on my new podcast, On Par with Maury Povich. Follow and listen to On Par wherever you get your podcasts.